world gone insane. An upside-down civilization cannot be real. A world of madness and terror.
It's the Dana Gould Hour.
Today's show is brought to you by Harry's. Please visit harrys.com and use the promo code Dana to save $5 off your first purchase. It's that time again. The rites of spring have been performed. We feathered our nests and gestated long enough. It's time to squat on down and drop an episode. Right in your ear. Today's show features one of my favorite new comedians, the hilarious Hampton Yunt, as well as Jonah Ray, he of The Nerdist, The Meltdown, and Jonah Radio fame. You can follow them both on the Twitter by writing the @ symbol before their names. It's just that easy. Also on board is the hilarious Eddie Pepitone. Check him out at Eddie Pepitone and see his new special In Ruins on Netflix. You all know Eddie Pepitone. As always, giving you 100 cents on the comedy dollar. Susan Burke is here. You can follow her at That Susan Burke and see her film Smashed, also on the Netflix. Speaking of films, we are graced by the presence of filmmakers Matt Barber and Brittany Machado. They have an amazing documentary called Give Me Sex, Jesus, and it's all about how devout Christians rationalize their faith against their need to perform happy sexy time. Check it all out at GiveMeSexJesus.com, if only to see that in your browser history. Me? I'll be in Portland at the Bridgetown Comedy Festival May 7th, 8th, and 9th, and at the Acme Comedy Club in beautiful Minneapolis, Minnesota, May 14th, 15th, and 16th. This is all in the year of our Lord 2015. I will be in Bloomington, Indiana for the Limestone Comedy Festival June 4th, 5th, and 6th. Details for all of this malarkey is on the live shows page at danagould.com. I promise. But now, on with the show. The podcast show. It's a show. I think of it as a show.
It's showtime.
Gould Hour. Free and worth it.
It's a beautiful day here in Southern California. It's spring, so the temperature is creeping up into the low 90s. The grass is wilting and birds are randomly bursting into flame mid-flight. My guests today are co-star of Comedy Central's The Meltdown and captain of his own podcasting ship, Jonah Radio, the lovely and talented Jonah Ray.
This is the sound of my voice.
Also gracing our microphones, one of my favorite comedians, one of the people that I watch on stage who makes me think, oh, I should have thought of that. And that doesn't happen too much. And this is, by the way, not complimentary to him as a person at all. If you've not seen him on Conan, go on your computer and clicky-clack so you can see him on Conan. Please welcome Hampton Yunt.
This is the sound of Jonah's voice also.
Now, Hampton, you don't have a podcast.
Not yet. One day we all will.
It's like meeting a man with no hands.
Yeah. You have to teach him how to hand.
I'm tired of him.
Tired of podcasting?
Tired of podcasting.
And I really do want to start one because they...
Take mine. I have a couple.
You have a lot.
I had two.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. Well, one is, I don't take the radio too seriously. I do that as I wish to keep it fun.
I do with this one. That's why they come out every 7 weeks.
Yeah, but you still stress out over it every time.
I work. I work on it.
Yeah. You seem stressed.
My name's on it, so I want it to be good.
Yes, of course. And they are great. They're great. Some of the nicest compliments I get from being on podcasts is because of this one.
See? Because you put a little care into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, I grew up in a little town called Vaudeville, USA. And we had three things: showmanship, pizzazz, love of country.
Yes.
And that's what I bring.
Yeah.
That's what I bring to every ounce of my being.
To that end, last Thursday, I was on Conan.
It was great.
It was a good set.
It was a great set.
You would think. I woke up that morning, no voice. Could not speak. Mm. It was a little rough the day before. It was allergies. It got really hot really quickly, and a lot of people get sick or people get allergies. I had nothing. Now, I say to myself, I'm not going to cancel. I'm a pro. So I call my doctor.
Yeah, sure, man.
I go to Beverly Hills, and I get a steroid shot and a B12, and I shut the hell up, and my vocal cords shrink, and I get to the show, and I'm like, okay, good. My voice is thin, but it's coming back. It's working. I go, all right, I can do this. Go over the set. I don't want to alarm them. Like, I don't want them to have to worry about me. Like, I've done this a million times. You don't have to worry about me at all. And I'm with J.P. Buck, who's the segment producer. Great guy. And he walks out. Here's the thing. And he goes to me, you want bullet points? Which, for people who don't know, bullet points are, if you're doing a set, it's a little card under the camera with little cues to what your
pretty
bits
much your set list.
Your set list. And 9 times out of 10, you don't need it, but it's nice to have because you don't want to go up and not know what you're doing when you're the only thing on television on that particular channel.
It takes just a little bit of the pressure off. Well, on the other side of mine, they had changed my set around so much that I needed the bullet points because it's like, you know, I was like, I think it should go this way. They said it should go in this order. And I knew if I had done it without bullet points, I would have just flowed right into where the jokes were normally for me.
I always use it, not that I'm worried about going up, but because I don't want to worry about worrying about going up. So it's just, I'm glad it's there. One time, the first time I did Letterman, which ironically was also the last time I did Letterman, I blanked for a second and it came back and it just looked like I took a confident pause.
Ooh.
But it was, you're in the moment, so it doesn't, you don't feel the panic because you're too in it. It's like, you're not afraid of the car wreck until after the car wreck.
Yeah.
So I'm out there with JP and I'm really worried about my voice. And he goes, do you want bullet points? I went, nah. I go out.
With that voice.
Do the set. Yeah.
No, thank you.
I do the set, which I've done many times. It's basically 4 bits. 1, 2, 3, bang, 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 and nothing. Nothing. I can't make the word leap from what is the connective phrase to get me into my last bit. And the connective phrase was, that was my fear, and that would kick me into this third. I couldn't. It was just not there. And I think in the space of like 10 seconds or 15 seconds. First, you sound like you're having a stroke. Well, that's, you know, because that's
horrifying.
And then I go to, I start to think, what's another bit I can do right now?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Totally.
Yeah. And then
Reagan was shot recently.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I just start laughing and I say, this has never happened to me before. I have no idea what's next. We're all experiencing something.
What was the crowd's reaction?
Yeah. They totally laughed. And then it came back to me instantly.
Yeah, they left that in, right?
No, they cut it. And then I did the last bit and it was fine. But I felt like, as a professional comedian, I felt like a guy who'd killed a patient. I felt like Joan Rivers' doctor.
You go out into the parking lot in your scrubs and cry.
I literally let him down. No, I really felt like everything I've done up to this point in my career is immediately scrubbed because I dropped the ball.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And they couldn't have been nicer and they couldn't have cared less. I mean, it took them 7 seconds. And I did. No, the thing, if I just went, well, that's it, I'm done, that would have really been unprofessional.
Who would have thought completely?
Who would have thought this far in your career that would have been the thing to ruin everything?
Yeah, it would just delete everything. But see, to me, it's like I go up for like 15 seconds. And then I pick up the thread and it's fine. Andy Dick could go on and give a pregnant woman an abortion against her will. And they would go, it's Andy. And he'd guest host the following week.
So you think
you're not the clock king, like master of precision.
Yeah, people, no, that's what I
will.
Yeah.
Like, people will call you a fraud, Dana.
Well, that's like, there's two things I can do. I pride myself on. I'm a very good parent.
Yeah.
And
what's that reaction?
He listed that first. It's like, no.
Yeah, well, maybe come up with a different reaction than a sexy yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm a good dad.
Oh,
I'm a good cop.
I'm a good cop.
I'm a fucking world-class comedian.
And then, like,
I'm a good stand-up. And like when that was taken away, I was like, oh, no. No, you're just a good parent. The other thing is completely shitty now.
You talk about your kids when you mess up a joke.
I think about it now and I just go like, ah!
But you know, no one would have known. And you now you're telling people about it.
Of course I'm telling people about it.
What like, but no one could have known.
Because you're only as sick as your secrets, Jonah. You got to put it out there and own it.
Is that why I have allergies?
Yeah.
When I
and they were like, I said to Conan, I said like, I've known Conan since 1992, you know. And I said like,
before he
AD? But I said like, I said that's never happened to me before, and he said, be glad it happened here. Because you know, like on Letterman, it would have been like, get out of the building. We have quite an esteemed and august gathering here on what I can say, in all honesty, is a balmy Southern California night. It's dimly lit here at Falcon's Lair. I have the tiki lights going. We almost set the house on fire with a misplaced pizza box. And the house is alive with the smell of burning cardboard. My guests are comedian, filmmaker, Susan Burke.
Hi, this is the sound of my voice.
The star of the documentary, The Bitter Buddha. And you can see his special, In Ruins, on Netflix, Edward Pepitone.
This is the sound of my voice.
And that's...
I can't let you in now, Dave. I'm sorry, Dave.
Also joining me are the filmmakers behind a documentary that I just saw that is really fascinating, entitled Give Me Sex, Jesus. Please welcome Brittany Machado.
This is the sound of my voice.
And her lover, Matthew Barber.
This is the sound of my voice.
They're already so much more romantic than I've ever been. Now, Brittany, explain to me the title, Give Me Sex, Jesus.
Well, it was supposed to be, Jesus, don't let me die before I've had sex. Now say it back to me.
Oh, I've said that plenty of times. That was sort of the subset to my family motto, which is death before intimacy. The Gould family crest is two lions on a couch watching television, not speaking to each other. Better. Did you guys come upon this together, or did you start it and then Matt, you came in later? What is the origin of how you guys both came to be together making this film?
I was starting it originally as sort of an exploratory documentary for a feature film I was trying to make. And it was going to be just a little short 10-minute thing. It blew up into a feature-like documentary. And I'm just a filmmaker, so I needed some like academic underpinning, so this one came aboard.
And how is it that you are the person that can do this film?
I got my master's degree in religion and sociology, the sociology of religion and sexuality. So when I moved back to LA after grad school, I got introduced to Matt, and he brought me on as sort of a consultant to just make sure that anything he said wasn't too terribly wrong. And I ended up loving the project and said, well, why don't we make it a little bit bigger? And we raised a bunch of money on Kickstarter.
Studying sexuality and religion is sort of like, those two are, that's a hard juxtaposition for me. It's sort of like, I studied stand-up comedians and good listeners. Really? Not out of that.
Trying so hard to listen right now.
Now, Eddie, were you raised very religious?
Not at all. But I realized that religion comes in anyway through the back door, and that's not an innuendo.
Yeah, that's a whole section of their movie.
Because I think my parents were the first generation that really rejected it, even though my dad... Okay, here it is. I'll just really make this brief before I go on forever. My dad's Sicilian, so his mother was a big churchgoer, a big Roman Catholic. The Sicilians are like, oh, Jesus, God, Jesus, you know.
Right.
Oh, Jesus Christ, you know.
Yeah.
But my grandfather was an engineer, and he was a science guy, and he was like, come the fuck on, Rose. Can we get in the 20th century here? Well, then my dad completely rejected it, but what gets carried on is the guilt. It definitely because there that fucking Catholic Church guilt is in my dad.
Of course,
through
it is.
My grandmother, who I love,
right.
She made the best lasagna. I've gone vegan. Anyway, it's a whole fucking story. But
look, 4 years ago, I killed a hobo with my car, I still feel bad about it. I mean, I have flashes. Christianity is about guilt.
It is.
No, Judaism is about guilt, and Christianity is about shame. That's
Ooh,
what
that's
I took
a fine
from it.
Distinction, yeah. Because shame is
But that's
is
why
guilt
they both
me.
Make the best comedians.
And by the way, my mom is Jewish, so I had Jewish and Catholic. I had...
Your mom is a Jew, so you're Jewish...
So you're technically a Jew, because if your mom's a Jew, you're...
Don't start, Burke. This is the sound of my voice.
You must love money.
I control the media, which is why I'm on a lot of podcasts.
No, but isn't it if you come out of a Jewish woman, you're a Jew, but if you...
Yes, no, you're right.
If
I am Jewish by Jewish law. Anyway, my mom's side of the family, they were religious, but my mom... Not at all. So I didn't grow up with any kind of structure religiously. You know, you still get what they got.
Sure.
You know what
so
I
you
mean?
You didn't like go to church and stuff, but nah. You just got all of the cultural imported on you?
Yeah, but I actually, you know, that's not totally true. For some reason, I don't know why, I went to church a couple of times. I think a couple of my friends, and I just went with them, and I would be the kid laughing. Like, the kids didn't want to be there, you know? And we would just be...
Yeah. I was an altar boy in the...
Were you?
In the Boston Archdiocese.
No way.
In the
and
70s,
you came out okay?
And no one laid a finger on me. What I find interesting is, and I'm not sure about Susan, but like Eddie's and my religious experience were pretty similar and acutely negative. There was no positive aspect to religion in my experience. There was my mother thought Jesus was all powerful, and 9 times out of 10 was like, Jesus, where's my flip flop? I can't find my green flip flop.
My dad would
like,
go,
I can't
God.
Believe he's that much of a, he's, I don't believe he gets into the minutiae of that. He's like, I have to invent. I've got to cause a
you've
heart.
You've got to ask St. Anthony for help with that.
Yeah, exactly.
They do. Now, that's a great thing. They have a saint for everything.
Something's lost that can't be found. Please, St. Anthony, look around.
Do you know that St. Christopher, I think it's Christopher, is the patron saint of actors. And
travelers.
Travelers?
That's why he's always on your dashboard. Mm-hmm. But he's always looking in. He's never watching the road.
Yeah.
He's always.
But
that's the old George Carlin bit. Hey, St. Christopher, check it out. Left turn. I think back like, oh my God, that really did happen. That really happened. I can't believe that. What is something from your life that is like that?
The first thing that comes to mind is this thing. It was nothing. It was out of my control completely.
You panicked and strangled a hooker.
No, no. It was...
Mr. President.
It was the weirdest thing.
That's the plot of Absolute Power. That's the plot of Absolute Power with Gene Hackman and Clint Eastwood.
I know. I love the idea of a president going, I panicked.
So I took 20 to 30 seconds out of my time.
I just grabbed a gun and went wild.
By the way, I think to strangle somebody, it takes about 5 minutes.
Oh, is it 5 minutes?
Yeah, yeah, really? It's so hard. Yeah.
I was seeing red for quite a long time.
The Hitchcock film, I think it's one of his lesser films. It's Topaz or Torn Curtain. But one of the things that's in it is like somebody gets strangled in real time and it just goes. And it's just a lock off shot of this person's feet flailing for like 7 minutes.
Wait, so
people are hard to kill.
Wait, so Adnan couldn't have done it at all.
Exactly. Maybe her larynx just did that.
Yeah.
They collapse.
Yeah.
They collapse.
Who's that? Who's
larynx.
That?
Larynxes collapse.
Larynxes collapse. Larynx. Good night, sweetheart.
Yeah. Just remember.
The moral of the story is larynxes collapse.
You think every larynx collapsing is an inside job. Some larynxes
well, no,
just collapse.
Well, no, it is an inside.
Doctor.
All right, now Joan is going to talk about the hyoid bone. All right, so tell me what happened. I'm sorry.
This is something I still look back on, and I can't believe it happened, is I was hanging out with this girl, huge crush on her, but she was really pretty, and I was not. And so I abided by social rules and did not make any attempt to be cliched, dorky kid hitting on one of the hottest girls at school. But we were hanging out a bunch.
High school?
Yeah, high school.
Okay.
we're hanging out a bunch, you know, we were like getting along really well, and it was, you know, real typical, like something out of just a movie, right. You know.
I didn't sleep with any high school girls until my 40s.
Yeah. That's when it got good.
I just had a huge crush on her, and we were doing, you know, nice things for each other. Then, like, she kind of started seeing some guy, kind of hang out with some guy. And then one night, my phone rings, and I answer it, and her cell phone had butt-dialed my phone. And I go, hello? And then I hear just kind of rustling around. And then it's her and this guy in a car together talking about how much they love each other. And then they start making out. And then they, I think, start just kind of just giving each other, you know, blowjobs and fingering each other.
Blowjobs, suck jobs.
And it's just like.
He was blowing her?
Her dick?
He was giving her a girl blowjob?
And you lucked out. You dodged bullets.
Yeah. But like, it was just one of those things.
Didn't have to blow her dick. Yeah.
It was just like, and I
love
didn't
your
know.
Penis. I love your penis. Wop, 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 wop.
And I couldn't hang up. Like, I didn't know what to do. I was kind of in shock. The guy's like, oh, what about that guy, Jonah?
Oh, whoa. No! I can't.
That's and like, and she's like,
oh,
he's
no!
Like, he's like, Jonah's just a friend. Like, I would no. never think of him that way at all.
Wait.
That's gross.
Had you been kissing?
Me and the girl?
You and the girl.
No, I said there was no, we were just buds. There was shit. No,
okay, yeah. While you were listening to them make out, were you kissing the phone?
Yeah, I was jerking off.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I would what never was, think of
did
him
you
that
ever
way.
Bring her to task about it?
And then she sees that her phone's on. She's like, hello? And then I hang up.
Oh,
and
no.
Then I go, fuck it. And then I call her back, and it goes to voicemail, and I just leave this like long, rambly, how could you deny your feelings when things
oh,
are so...
No!
Like,
just, oh, it just gets worse.
Yeah, I just like went off. And
you
then,
needed
like,
bullet points. You so needed bullet
oh,
points.
Oh, I should have needed
you, walk away.
How could
pretend
you
don't yeah. know her.
Yeah, so... and then,
how could you blow your way past our love?
Yeah.
How could you fight through our love?
Yeah. She then...
I don't need a piano to yeah. fall on my head, but apparently I need a dick to fall in your mouth.
So I leave the message and you know, it's all me like just putting everything out there, all of my
his dick fell in my
emotions.
Mouth.
And then a little bit goes by and then she calls and she's like, hey, did my phone call your phone? And I go, did you listen to your the message I left? And she's like, what? I was like, you should probably listen to the message I just. And she's like, why? And I was like, just listen to it. And she's like, what the fuck? And I hang up.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It just gets worse.
And then I'm just waiting around. And she eventually calls back. And I was leaving town the next day.
Oh, man.
And she's like, hey, what time is your flight? And I was like, 2:30. Like, you know, trying to sound tough and, you know, holding back tears. Just that 2:30.
That's a manly flight.
I get some pancakes with my parents before that. Probably.
You know, wearing a sleeveless white tee, a pack of cigarettes rolled up in the
corner. It's a big news for my parents. So she shows up at the airport, and this is
she shows up at the airport.
Shows up at the airport, hands me an envelope. She's like, "Hey, well, I guess I'll see you."
We are an official. We are no longer friends. Form.
And I go, "What?" She's like, "Just read it on the plane." And then I get on the plane, and I open it up, and it's a letter. From her that she wrote, like, I guess the night before. Yeah, exactly. She's like, oh, here, like, you know, I really had feelings for you, but it never felt right. But here's some, I took some pages out of my diary from like 3 weeks ago, which is like right before she met that dude. And then so it's like I'm reading these journal entries
wow.
On the plane about how much she's in love with me, but how she doesn't think it would work. And it was like a very sweet, weird thing to read of just like, you know,
that's
and like,
incredible.
It's almost like it was one of those things where I'm reading it and I'm like crying on a plane because it's already easy enough to cry yeah. on a plane.
The oxygen's thin.
Yeah.
That's why. movies aren't great. It's yeah. thin oxygen. Yeah.
And I'm like crying, reading this thing.
Overboard with Goldie Hawn.
Yeah, not really.
I've said this before many times, but I was bawling when I watched Swing Vote. I just couldn't handle
oh, yeah.
it. I couldn't handle
I
it.
I cried when I watched Wolverine
yeah,
on
yeah,
the
yeah.
plane. I'll cry during any movie.
I did cry on a plane at a movie.
All the time.
I cry almost. Like, I fucking. Music swells on an advertisement yeah. for that airline. Oh, really? I'll start to tear up.
I very easily can engage in the story.
The end of My Dog Skip when he's too old to jump on the bed.
Okay, that's but you know that whole movie is boiled down into that old commercial where it's like the guy's running up the stairs and his puppy is trailing behind him, and then the puppy's like now an adult dog.
It ages into a horse rapidly.
But then like you know then
it's
the dog
a centaur and he's got insurance
shooting. This freak animal. He's running up
blows
the stairs.
The dog's brains out. So you cry on the plane.
That gives you so much validation for like you weren't crazy.
I wasn't
you
crazy.
Know what I mean?
Yeah, I never thought of it that way as a, being a positive element in my life. It was just a weird thing that I couldn't believe. But
well,
like,
I think
the whole of like how it just tipped off all those events that happened after that. And you know, what's crazy is that like 3 years later, we ended up. She was living in Seattle. I was on tour. Went up there and we kind of got together for 3 months.
Fucked on the note.
I put on Love Buzz by Nirvana.
Laid out the letter as a blanket. Yeah.
And this is, of course, the woman grew up to be porn star Bobby Starr.
Those would be sad origin stories, porn star origin stories.
It's in two categories, father, uncle.
Yeah, I was like, what? In what way is it not a horrible story? Every now and then you'll meet one who's like, I am in Mensa and I'm just way too smart to not be doing Born. Like,
yeah, you're just really tempted to go, nah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Are you really in Mensa or are you in crazy porn star Mensa?
My dad used to say his relationship with God was this: God, and I'm not making this up, please, please just pass over this house without hurting. Like, he just saw God as a completely punishing God.
Yeah, yeah. Just
please pass over our house and leave us alone. Yeah. That was my fucking up.
Brittany, did you have a very religious upbringing?
I did.
Like, how is it that you ended up studying sexuality and religion? Like, how if you come from a very religious upbringing, which I assume you did.
I did.
And where did you study religion and sexuality?
I studied religion and sexuality at University of Chicago. And then I started studying it because I grew up very evangelical. And so actually the whole thing about like God being this scary being, I grew up in the exact opposite culture, which is that Jesus is your best friend. Not only is your best friend, but for like me being female, like Jesus will be your boyfriend until he sends you a husband too. So like you're supposed to sort of,
by the way, not many boyfriends do that.
Just stick around.
Yeah. Not boyfriends until they meet a husband. Like, all right, I'm going to introduce you.
Husband for Lori tonight. No. I'm alone. Yeah. I want to find someone permanent.
Right. If we can't find you a husband tonight, I might ask you to maybe rub me off behind the dumpster. You know, I want something, and then we'll go to Winchell's. Anything you want.
Hey Nick, you want to be Lori's husband?
Not him.
Never mind.
But it is strange. In talking to people who grew up with a God that was like very loving and caring.
I can't imagine it.
It is at the time both like the most comforting thing in the world and the most anxiety producing, because you're like, oh, what if I fuck up though? Because then like I've really like let Jesus down, and then God is also sort of the creator of the universe and he has like this whole plan for me. So am I not like living into God's plan when I make mistakes? And like you get into this whole like crazy headspace.
Well, you do get that if predestination is so incredibly prevalent, why do anything?
Yeah.
It's true. It's like, what?
Because you got to take your part. You got to fucking take your part, Gould. You're always trying to get out. Even if it's predestined, you have to fucking do the thing.
It'll give you a better spot in heaven.
Again, how terrible was the world when that theory came up? You know when things are going to be great? When you're dead.
Exactly.
What if I try to fix things now? No. Don't do anything now that would give you pleasure. Just die. Everything will be great.
That's the American dream. But it is. Like, that whole idea is super American.
Is this,
but there's, like, a huge history.
American?
Oh, it's absolutely 100%.
That doesn't
Protestant
go back to...
ethic. Yeah. It is 100% American. It did not exist anywhere before that.
What is American?
The idea that heaven is where you want to be afterward. because it gave, like, life was so dire for so long.
That's purely American. I thought that was
going back to the Middle Ages.
Yeah. No. Heaven was sort of, maybe you'd get in, but that's why we had the Catholic Church and stuff, because you needed people to be arbiters, you know, a way station between you and God.
That's what purgatory was, right? You had to, like, earn your way into heaven, you know?
But American evangelicals were the first ones to say, oh, no. Anybody can get to heaven. Anybody can. There's this thing called predestination, and we guarantee it, and it's going to be amazing. You just have to earn your way there. And then there was a couple freeloaders who were like, we don't feel like earning it anymore. We're just going to say everybody's in, and you should just sort of, like, do good things so that you can get a better spot in heaven or just live a better life here to lead more people to Christ.
And what you're talking about now, and I really want to get to the topic of your documentary, which is how people who are devoutly dedicated to Christ in their mind reconcile their biological desire to fuck with the fact that the guy they supposedly love the most thinks it's wrong if they're not married.
But does he think it's wrong?
There's a tremendous amount of mental gymnastics that go on.
But this is the point. The point that you were just talking about of the different levels. Well, there's purgatory, and then there's limbo. If you're an unbaptized child, we have another room called limbo. We don't have limbo anymore. We knocked down a wall and opened up purgatory. Then we made purgatory a sun porch. You know, it starts to sound like another religion with a lot of levels. Scientology. The minute you get into, well, there's this level, but then there's that level, and then there's this rule, and you got to go left over here, and if you don't have that many points, you got to go all the way. Then it clearly is a couple of guys at a table and some quills and making shit up. I am all down 100% on I do not know everything. I absolutely believe that Jesus Christ was a human being that walked the earth, caused great cultural impact.
Absolutely.
If you choose to live your life in the way that he is described as living his life, you could do a lot worse. But
he said the best stuff.
Yeah, man. But the minute you get into, but if you have a fillet of fish on Friday, there's a cave. We made a special cave for you. That sounds like that came from a dude.
Yeah.
That did come from a dude. The fish on Friday thing was actually because at the end of the week, all the fish were going bad and they wouldn't fish on the weekend. And so they made up a rule where it was like, we'll eat fish on Friday, don't eat meat on Friday, so that, like, the fishermen can get rid of the last of their meat.
You're talking about the fish on Friday rule coming from the fishermen. The wealth of the church was so prevalent that the serfs could not afford meat, and that is where the Hamburglar came from.
Which I used to believe in before I went vegan.
By the way,
the Hamburglar.
Hampton Yount, who's also on this show, made the brilliant observation that Mayor McCheese is a hamburger that eats hamburgers.
God, fuck.
When you have daughters, thinking porn stars are cool goes out the window.
I never got the look at
Stephen Hawking, like, don't let that happen to someone.
I never got the idea that they were cool. I thought they were very useful. When I went and saw the latest Nacho Vigalondo movie, the guy that did Time Crimes, and he did this movie called Open Windows with Elijah Wood and Sasha Grey. And Sasha Grey is really good in it. I went to a screening of it at Cine Family.
It's one of two movies.
you're not including many of the amazing episodes of Entourage.
Isn't it weird? Is doing Entourage truly more noble?
I don't know.
Seriously.
I always thought it was funny that the fanciest word used in the show is the name of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's these guys there at the screen because she's going to be there for a Q&A. And they're just these guys, like, porn guys. Like, I never got the idea that, like,
my friend calls them wags, weird alone guys.
Yeah. She, like, shows up on screen. The guy's like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Woohoo. What is the thought process behind the guy that's like, I'm the guy that's really into porn. Hopefully I get a girlfriend someday that also likes guys that are into porn. I don't know where the... Her friend Dana, when she's at those conventions and she'll take pictures of fanboys, and just like, what's the end game here for you? What do you think is going to happen?
Something tells me she's not weirded out by germs.
But the idea is like, it's like, you know, those guys are at the convention. They're like, well, what a great day. I got a lot of autographs. I got some cool t-shirts with Jenny or whatever on it. And then they're all like at a bar later and they're like, hey, those girls are checking us out. I wonder what we should tell them what we did today.
I fapped so much. I fapped.
Is that the word now?
I guess like it's the joke that's, like online.
Because
it's
fap is the noise. Fap. Yeah.
Because it's onomatopoetic.
That's what they call basically. When all the iCloud pictures of all the celebrities got hacked.
They
called it the fappening.
Right, the fappening, right. Yeah. Did fap come from it, that it sounds like fap, fap, fap?
Yeah, okay. I guess so.
Okay. Yeah.
Does it sound like that?
I don't know.
Guys, my weird two dicks are...
I'm sure it sounds like that.
They're full of holes like wiffle bats.
When you masturbate a lot, it gets more and more complex. I'm now at the point now where I need a cow's heart hooked up to a car battery.
Which do you fuck? The heart or the battery?
Well, the battery makes the heart pulse.
Yeah.
So it's real.
I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Your son is fucking a bloody cow's heart that's hooked up to a car battery, and he just looks at you and goes, would you knock?
Mom, I asked for some privacy.
Yeah. What? Because you can't hear. It's just like, whoa, 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 whoa.
God made cow's hearts and car batteries.
This is natural. Maybe fap is the sound of a guy jerking off between his belly that hangs over his junk.
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah. Yeah, it's that's like actually, constantly probably. Banging your head against a low ceiling.
Yeah.
When your belly acts like an annoying masturbatory door jam.
I got to lose some weight so I can masturbate.
Mike Lawrence said on the last episode of this podcast, he goes, I'm a huge Batman fan. But actually a small Batman fan by Batman fan standards. There's a guy in this documentary who needs to get laid so badly. I wanted to try to grow a vagina in my garden and just drop it off in his porch in a basket like a lost kitten or a baby. You could send away for a vagina the way you used to do it for azalea seeds.
It's like sea monkeys.
Yeah, exactly. You meet these people and I'm watching the thing going like, fuck something, please. Please, please fuck something.
A lot of times you can't even fuck your hand. That's that's how I grew up. Like if you masturbated, then you would be compromising your spirituality in some way.
When did you finally say fuck it to that?
It was a slow process.
Yeah.
I just slowly shed. Like some people's like, I'm going to rebel. Fuck it. But for me, it was like, it was a slow process. Yeah.
What religion did you grow up?
Evangelical. Oh. It was like, Brittany and I were very, very similar. Yeah.
But it's like so not irregular for people to think that like masturbation is wrong or that they'll go to hell if they have sex or some kind of, the term that's often cited is the slippery slope. If I kiss, will that lead to making out and making out lead to arousal? And then will that be over the clothes stroking? And then will that be heavy petting or what else? Heavy
the
petting.
Slippery slope is the end goal. Yeah.
That's what I call it.
I want a nice dry slope.
And
a sandpaper slope.
We're cutting all this down.
In Catholicism, like it's just like a big wink. Yeah, people don't have sex before marriage. Like, yeah, but then church lock-ins were all about like getting finger banged and stuff.
Church huh? What?
Like, church
what?
Church lock-ins. Like for youth group.
Oh, lock-in.
What's like, a church lock-in?
It's like when they lock all the kids in the basement of the church all night.
I've never
Jesus
heard of that.
Christ!
Oh. See, where I was an older boy, that was called a raping.
That was called a kidnapping.
It was like a youth group. I never went, but I heard stories about lock-ins were just like big makeout parties.
And they totally were.
And yeah, they just...
Oh, you know that.
Unless you were me.
There'd be a couple, youth pastors and then all the like 14 and 15-year-olds.
Greg, the cool youth deacon.
You get to watch cool, like Christ-friendly movies and eat popcorn.
Goonies.
The definition of Christ-friendly movies is very strange. Well, it's John Carpenter's The Thing. Escape from New York.
Now, isn't all this about the fact that we are just so afraid of sexuality? We're so afraid of our sexuality. Everybody, parents' generation.
We are afraid that we're going to die and that's it. And so we've created this belief that there is something beyond death. And one of the ways the people who got a hold of that concept and manipulated it to control people was by legislating their biological impulses. I'm astounded that religions don't prohibit how many shits a day you take, because that would be another great one. Like, you can only take a shit a day or you are going to burst into flames.
There used to be, it was called asceticism. It was in the Victorian era of America. It was people regulated their bowel movements.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh my God. I could use that now.
You didn't masturbate. You were actually considered a sort of more powerful being. It was really fascinating. It was like a very pervasive sort of bourgeoisie thing to do in Victorian America, like little post-Victorian America. I finally started to deconvert was like, I finally had sex in college and it sucked and it was the worst and the guy was a total jackass. But I woke up.
But a lot of those guys grew up to have wonderful podcasts.
Mine is not doing well.
So I was at the Improv, and I'm going to misquote somebody's joke and hopefully attribute it properly.
There's so many elements that could go wrong.
I hope it was Kyle Clark. And the joke was something to the effect of, he slept with a mermaid, and then he went back later and realized that from the waist down, the mermaid was a dolphin. And from the waist up, it was also a dolphin. I think it was Kyle Clark. I'm very, very sorry if I'm misattributing the joke that I've mangled in the retelling. Long story longer, I was texting my friend, Ken Daly, quoting that joke. And I said, so a hilarious joke, this comedian said, I fucked a mermaid, da-da-da-da-da, send. I'd come back from the Improv, and it was about 12 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And I looked down, and in between Ken texting me, my daughter Alice texted me, can you bring us to school early tomorrow? She woke up. She's 11. She woke up because they live 5 minutes away. And then I sent heard this great joke. I fucked a mermaid.
You sent that to your daughter?
I sent it to her at like 12 o'clock at night. Now, I know she's
away.
She doesn't see the text. No, because like everybody's asleep, and I'm like, do I go down there? Because I can't go into the house, because I don't want anyone to know this has happened.
Oh my God, dude.
I don't want anyone to know.
Oh my God.
It's a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah. No,
let's go down there.
Because hers had come earlier enough that she was asleep. There was no response. I literally sent it at 12:30. She had texted me at like 11.
Oh.
So I know she's asleep. I know she's not going to see it. I'm like, do I go down there? I'm not going to explain to my ex-wife, I have to delete something off of Alice's phone.
Never see the
kids. That's not going to work. I literally have to set my alarm at like 5:45, show up at the house before anybody. And this is the daughter that will get up early because she's very studious. And very,
oh, my God.
And go down there, grab her phone, delete it. I did work, but it's another one of the things that, like, I can't believe that really happened.
Holy crap, man. It's the equivalent of like you being a cop and like your kid gets your gun. Like, yes, you sending a joke. Like, the way you would joke to an audience or to your friends and then say it to your daughter. And it's the going off.
I'm going to say that analogy is a little imbalanced.
I don't think so.
It's the fear. It's the greatest fear I would have as a comic is like, my kid's going to totally hear me say the most fucked up.
Yeah. No, I think that's pretty accurate. Like, and I'm
the fear of your kid dying is just you being embarrassed in front of your kid.
The special before the most recent special that I did, Let Me Put My Thoughts in You, ends with me talking about spitefully blowing five guys behind a bar to dad.
Yeah.
My kids will probably see that when they're older. Yeah.
When I show it to them.
You sit down and you watch this.
We're old enough to see Dad's act now. That's my father.
Yeah, but they're, you know, you could always say, well, look, this guy has kids, and then just show him, like, you know, some other horrible comic.
I remember being like 12 years old in the car with my father and his friend, who was a wildlife photographer. And I just remember this really specifically, being in the back seat and this guy turning to my dad and going, I got this new lens. Like, I can do a close up of a mosquito drinking blood out of your arm with this lens.
Whoa.
And I remember my dad turning to me and goes, "Oh yeah, well maybe you could take a drink of the blood out of my pecker." Like, one, not funny. Two, also typical of my dad, completely hostile for no reason at all. It's just like, well, I have nothing else to say. Might as well attack you. And two, like my dad saying pecker, which is the whole thing was just like, bleh.
Also, another one, just your dad asking his friend to take a picture of his dick. That's just kind
of all of it. Yeah, all of it. None of it's good.
Boy, that'd be crazy, eh? That happened? Oh, boy. What if we did that?
That'd be so funny.
What if we did that? That'd be wrong.
That'd be wrong.
Right.
Yeah, people would really flip out if we did that, though. We should drop Dana off real quick.
Oh, my God. So porn stars can have kids. Like, can Dana DiArmond ever have a kid? Hey, Mom, what'd you do in your
20s?
There's a...
kids will get to
I that. Imagine it's like, all right, it's a breech birth. The baby's coming out sideways. You're fine. Never mind. False alarm. The baby's coming out holding a broomstick sideways. Oh, you're fine.
No problem.
Right.
The baby's juggling. The baby's doing full contact juggling.
The baby is wearing standard NFL shoulder pads. Oh, no, you're fine.
These are giant vagina jokes.
These are the jokes for the back of Playboy. Yeah.
You're an evangelical Christian. You go to college, and you're in a pretty evangelical
Went to, like, an evangelical university.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I had sex with a bad boy. And then I woke up the next morning, and I realized I wasn't burning in hell, because I had been told that, like, people would be able to tell you had had sex, and your face would be sort of muted. You'd lose the
luster. So you believed
luster.
It right up wow. until you yeah. woke up okay.
I did. And I was totally pressured by this guy to do it. But I was like, I'm fine. And after that, I was like, oh, I got better sexual partners, and life got better. And then I was like, wait a second. What other bullshit did they teach me? People started coming to me in the dark of night to ask questions about sex. And I was like, that's weird. And then I went to, like, this great grad
just
school.
Just, like,
yeah.
people that you went to college with. Not, like, just random.
Just
not people from the neighborhood.
Just strangers in the night. They came out of the fog.
I heard you had sex.
Yeah. If I like girls with hairy legs, does that mean I'm a poofter? No. Good.
I had the exact opposite experience. Like, I actually touched a breast when I was in college, and I flipped out.
Wait a minute. You're a human man. You're touched the breast, bumped into it in the line at the cafeteria, or you were making out and you went for it.
Yeah, I went for it. I'm like, you know what? Fuck, I'm going to do it. And then I exposed the breast and...
Could you say this slower?
I literally had an out-of-body experience. No, it was. I didn't.
Which is the exact opposite of what you were trying to do.
And I'm like, oh my God, I am violating my purity.
Such guilt.
And so I fled, and I went and I prayed, and I promised to God, I kid you not, I promised God that I would not French kiss until I got married.
Brittany, do you not think in that moment, let's imagine that there is an infinite being that has the ability to hear us and respond to us, and much of God's efforts goes into preventing George Lucas from getting his hands on this new Star Wars movie. If you're praying to God, like, you're going to get laid, and you really wanted to get laid, and then you almost got laid, and then you're like, no, this is wrong, and you ran away. I envision God up in heaven going, you idiot! Get laid! I made this great thing that fits you. It's perfect. It feels phenomenal. You should do it as much as you can if the other person is groovy with it. Do you believe that that is a one possible version of God's
opinion? I think that like the dynamic that evangelicals have set up with sexuality is a very BDSM relationship, which is like prohibit, restrict, restrain, right? And then like everything else is just so good after that. People get off on the craziest shit, and like repression leads to great orgasm sometimes. And like, I feel like there's so many evangelicals who are running around having crazy sex, doing blow off of cowboys, and like doing all this crazy
doing
shit.
Blow off
Wait,
of,
what?
Wait a minute.
Doing blow off of cobwebs?
You weren't supposed to say anything.
Cowboys.
Cowboys.
Oh, cowboys.
Cowboys.
Rent boys.
Oh, cowboys.
What are cowboys?
I had this whole image about cowboys.
But and then they go, oh, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong.
No, it's like super it's super, super pleasurable because it's prohibited. And then they're like, oh shit, I need to repent, and I have all this guilt and shame. But it's this cycle. And so
it's like a garden hose, that the tighter you restrict the end of the hose, the farther the water will shoot out of the hose. because it's been
it's the old thing. If you push a thought away, if you keep pushing a thought or a desire away, it's going to come back
right.
so strong.
Right.
You know?
The fact that they have to do that, like, I didn't have sex for 4 years, and then I fucked 38 people during one lunch.
Grant you, it was a long lunch.
Yeah, it was, and I am now banned from that Sizzler.
Shit, here comes Ted. No, that was last week. I'm fine for another 4 years.
4 years. But, like, doesn't that prove that people should just be fucking?
I think so.
Or if not fucking, at least masturbating.
I just think that people shouldn't be so worried about it.
If I'm going to go to hell for jacking off, I don't want to be where I would be allowed to if I hadn't.
Oh, God, if I'm going to go to hell for jacking off, then I'm going to do every terrible thing possible. It's just like getting AIDS from stepping on a needle or something. Like, fuck that.
I don't want to be with the people that haven't been jacking off. That's like my friend Drake Sather, God rest his soul, had this great joke about, like, Jehovah's Witnesses used to come to his door and they're like, would you like to hear about the Jehovah's Witnesses? Really? No. Don't you want to go to heaven? Not if it's to be with a bunch of Jehovah's Witnesses. There were jokes I remember in, like, my dad's Playboys in the late 70s. I remember this panel specifically. It was five guys in a police lineup, and they each were holding signs of, like, 7 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches, 5 inches. And the cop going to the woman, who is the man that assaulted you? Like, that, like, you can't.
It's so bad.
It's so horrible, it's like 2 decades old. There was another old joke, like, goes into the police department and says, I was assaulted in the park, and the cop says, suck on this lemon. And she says, why? And he goes, it'll wipe that grin off your face. Like, these are, like, jokes that are in Playboy. There was that theory of, like, and this was a joke, but it was also an attitude. And this is an attitude that was prevalent in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
Like, hey, if you can't help it, lie back and enjoy it.
That was a senator. That
was a senator. You know what? Don't.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Don't.
If you're going to get murdered, you might as well enjoy it.
You know, if I was going to get murdered, I'd make a day of it.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, when does this happen to me?
I wouldn't sit around crying and holding my family. Yeah. I'd go out to a water park.
Yeah.
That's what I'd do. If I knew I was going to get murdered, I wouldn't be a bitch about
I would be a bitch about it. I'd go to a water park.
Yeah. Yeah.
Water parks are the best places to meet new people and then sit in their urine. Well, second most popular place.
Water parks were a great idea initially. One guy's like, this is amazing. I made one of the funnest things ever. And then people showed up. He's like, I've made a horrible mistake.
Yeah.
Like, I've made a horrible mistake.
The only thing you didn't factor in is the human bladder.
Yeah.
It's somewhere between amusement park and bath.
Yeah. Yeah.
We call it group bath.
But what's, like, the first water park, and the guy's like, hey, we got a situation. You know how we started the water park and everyone's loving it. You know, and then we also built bathrooms. I haven't seen
anybody
going to the bathroom.
Oh.
Well, that's crazy. Well, they're probably just, you know, holding it in. No, they've been drinking sodas.
They look relieved.
You know how we have a lemonade stand as well as no one's used the bathroom, and the water level has gone up 12 inches.
Yeah. Also, all our rides scare them. All our rides are scaring them. Yeah. So I'm sure
water parks are definitely a California thing of the past. Remember when water was a recreational thing?
Oh, yeah.
Instead of this thing that we killed each other over?
Yeah.
We would just celebrate it with it. We would make rides with it.
Yeah.
We rode on the water. Yeah. We ate it. We pissed in it. Yeah. We just
fill balloons and throw it at each other.
It was insane.
Yeah.
Now we knife each other over a cup of it.
I'm going to Mad Max eat you.
Do evangelicals believe in, like, levels to hell? Because would people who just masturbated be in the same hell as pedophiles and murderers?
No, it's the same. It's the same hell.
It's
really?
But this is the thing. It's technically the same, but they say that sex isn't a worse sin than any other sin. But my research, there is an enormous body of academic research that demonstrates that evangelicals think that sex is the worst sin. Worse than murder, worse than pedophilia, worse than cheating on your spouse. Having premarital sex is worse than all of that because right. it now separates you from God.
But that's just nutty to me. Also, I think it's safe to assume that Gandhi jacked off at least once. So Gandhi goes to hell, and it's like
Gandhi,
oh, Hitler no. and me in the same room.
Didn't Gandhi sleep with a bunch of naked virgins? Yeah.
You know what I would have had if I knew I was going to hell? Snow puffs. You know the pink ones? There's not a piece of organic food in it. It's like a pink snow puff with chocolate inside. It's basically made of shredded tires. I mean, there's not an organic. Oh, God, fiddle faddle. The caramel and the popcorn. But then the nuts are salty. And it's the salty and the sweet. That's why I'm in hell.
Gandhiji, please. Stop it.
Purity has racist overtones. The white people were scared of their kids or people mixing with other races. And so they created a purity movement to say...
Oh, it was race-based. Yeah. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
And when was it? Was starting in the 50s?
No. 1800s. Mm-hmm. Brittany, go. This is your expertise. Go.
Yeah.
I'm
open door.
Do we want to talk about the racism of sex?
Yeah.
I don't know. Was Why that where not? Our conversation yeah. was going?
I did not know that the purity movement went back to racial overtones. This is fascinating.
So slavery happened.
Created by God.
Yeah.
Like all things.
Predestined.
Yeah. He didn't realize until much later that that was a bad idea.
And then slavery was abolished, and people were like, uh-oh, what are we going to base our like national morality on? And so they started to get a little, I don't know, we're going to kind of just like make sure black people know they're not as good as white people still.
So this is all in America. This isn't Europe at all.
No, this is America. Well, there was some of it. There was a white, it was called the White Cross Movement. That was happening in Europe, and that got imported into the U.S. a little bit. Okay. But basically, in the late 1800s, there was this huge influx of immigrants. And when the immigrants came over, they didn't have jobs. And so a lot of the positions that they took were in prostitution. And at the same time, the country was having a huge financial upswing, so people had more money to spend. So prostitution boomed. It was huge. Well, what that also meant was that it was largely acknowledged that like middle-class white fathers would go and like pork prostitutes, and it was fine, and people wouldn't say anything about it. Two things happened. One, there was this huge influx of venereal disease. At one point, one third of the nation was infected with some sort of venereal disease. And then at the same time, there was all these like prostitutes who are fucking these white men and getting pregnant with interracial children. And they're like, uh-oh, we're going to have like an impure race now. No longer is America the white society that God destined it to be. So they had these moral crusades that happened. And so in 1883, they had the first purity conference and they started to try to stamp out sexual immorality. And the exact same thing happened 100 years later in the 90s after the AIDS crisis. Same thing.
So it was the original purity movement came as an attempt to separate, to keep white people fucking white people. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think in the purity movement there was a lot of concern that Latinos were fucking black people.
and a lot of the money that went into the purity movement were going into the rich churches, which were code word for white churches.
Right. Mm. And then in the 90s is when I remember the purity movement and purity rings. And that was in response to AIDS. But was it still racial or was it more?
It was still super racial because it was.
Super racial.
Ta-da!
Who did this to you? It was Lex Luthor. A black man disguised as Lex Luthor. No, it really was Lex Luthor. So you're saying this black man looks so much like Lex Luthor, you're convinced it actually is Lex Luthor. That's just the Boston Police Department. That you don't need Superman for that.
Welcome to Political Talk with two guys from Boston. A working man's look at the socio-political issues of our day. And now, Political Talk with two guys from Boston.
This is Political Talk with two guys from Boston. I'm Johnny Condon.
I'm still Robbie Sullivan.
So I'm sitting in the house. Jaws is on TNT.
Oh, I love Jaws.
Watching Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
My niece comes through the room.
Does she love it?
She's 12.
Oh, yeah.
She looks at the TV and she goes, Uncle Johnny, that's so fake.
No.
It broke my heart.
Are you kidding me?
Kids, the special effects are too good.
Oh, my God. When we were kids, that was so real. I was so scared. I ran out of the room.
I was still scared.
Oh,
and it
my
does look,
God.
It does, when he comes up and lands on the boat, he does look a little like a refrigerator.
Yeah, but with teeth.
But you're involved.
Oh,
you're involved in the story. But they get Transformers now, and they're like, it just looks, because it here's the weird thing. Are you ready? Fasten your freak belt. Because it was a real shark.
Yeah.
And not a real shark, but a real fake shark.
Yes.
It was a real thing in the water.
Yeah, it was moving.
It looks fake, whereas if it was really fake, it would look more real.
Wait, what?
Like Transformers is all computers.
Wait, say that one more time.
Because it was a real... Okay.
Okay, it's because a real shark.
It was a real...
It's really moving in the water.
It was a real fake shark.
Yeah, that's the part you got me weirded out.
It's a real fake shark.
All right, now I'm with you.
And it comes out of the water.
Yeah.
And it looks fake.
Yeah.
Whereas if it was a fake shark, it would look real because... Like Transformers looks more real than if you had a real giant robot.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's your imagination now filling in the blanks.
And it's just you can't it doesn't look as real as the fake real stuff. All Godzilla is all computers now.
Yeah.
It's not a guy in a suit.
But they used to have a real Godzilla.
It used to be a guy in a suit and he'd walk around the cardboard city.
And they make him look big, yeah.
Charming.
Yeah, it's
and
nice.
And it was enjoyable.
Not that scary.
And now not that scary, but lovely.
Yeah.
And now Godzilla's only in the new Godzilla movie for about 47 seconds.
I was so scared by the abominable snowman and Rudolph as a kid.
Sure.
The next scary thing I was allowed in my life was Jaws. It took me that long. From like 4 to 12. Nothing. I don't want nothing to do with scary.
Here's the thing about Rudolph that really fucked me up. Two things about Rudolph that really fucked me up. I know we're at it. We're in the height of summer. It's opening day.
Yeah. It's the ballpark today.
Height of summer.
Hanley Ramirez. Let's see what he does.
Two things. One, the whole concept of the Island of Misfit Toys sends this message to kids. If you're different, you should go away.
I think my folks maintained that throughout my childhood.
If you are in any way different, you should go on an island.
You're not right here.
Yeah, you should be on an island separated from everybody else. Two, what happened to the abominable snowman? They pulled all of his teeth out.
Yeah, made him nicer.
And Hermie did not have any anesthetic with him.
Yeah, Hermie wants to be a dentist.
But it was a horrible torture.
Right, he didn't even do it right.
Just a small man with pliers yanking out all of your teeth. It was a Mengele-ish torture. And that was what he's feeling is, imagine waking up with no teeth.
No.
It's horrifying.
Oh, God.
Hermie is a sadistic little man.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's okay. It was like in Misery. I've taken the liberty of breaking your ankles.
It is like that, because one of the things about Rudolph that I loved was that the mud on Rudolph's nose is sort of representative of all of us, sort of like hiding behind.
Hiding.
Yeah.
And what does it do? It also prevents you from breathing.
Yeah.
It's very, very
But it makes
meaningful.
Your father not hate you as much.
Exactly.
That's nice.
Even though it suffocates you, pretend to be someone you're not, and you won't have to go to an island.
This is what you should do for your parents. Forget about your own happiness, serve theirs, and then grow up to be maladjusted.
This whole thing is landing on me like a ton of shit.
I'm so sorry.
And Santa is a cock in that show. He actually sees Rudolph's nose and goes,
you know,
Donna,
what?
You should be ashamed of yourself. Fuck you. It's
really,
my child.
I always thought Santa in that movie was a subplot.
Well, Santa in that movie is, and then the next one was Year Without a Santa Claus. Like, bullshit, I'm not doing it. Santa's a cock in all of those
shows. He's just playing a dick now.
Yeah,
sorry to say that, but he's just, he's total dick.
But it's all computers. Planet of the Apes was on, and my niece goes, so are they ape people? I'm like, no, they're apes. She goes, but they don't look like apes. Well, no, it was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
They're not photorealistic apes. Because
right.
The apes now is computers. All the apes is computers now.
But if there was a man who was an ape, Dad, what would he look like?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's what
kids must say to their folks all over
the country.
And you know, in terms of photo, but here's the thing. In the new apes movies, all the apes is computers.
Are they?
And they look like apes, but there is a tremendous dearth of fecal throwing in those movies.
Who's in that movie?
No one knows because it's all computers.
That's what I'm saying. They look like apes. So who's, you know, starring?
It's Gollum. Gollum is the ape guy.
Is that right?
Yeah, the guy that was Gollum in the Midget Sword movie. You can't say midget anymore.
Oh, so he could move right to play
that? We have to delete everything now.
Let me ask you that. Is that what happens? A guy like that can move right? Is he just wearing the suiters because of his voice or his acting? I don't understand.
I don't know.
It's the physicality, I would think.
I assume. Yeah, it's like Shields and Yanel.
Oh, I loved them.
Where are they?
Oh, for God's sakes. I could watch the opening 10 times, just the opening. I don't know.
Who?
I think they're coming back. They'll have a show. It'll be like two elderly people walking around in an elderly home, and they'll just bump into stuff and then overreact.
Why are you always with a kite?
I can do the robot from Shields and Yanel. I practice that stuff.
Who flies a kite?
Yeah, it's so weird.
You have less than nothing to do.
Do you know what song I miss in my life? More than Shields and Yanel, more than Carol Burnett, more than any of them shows was... the end of Donnie and Marie.
I'm a little bit country. He's a little bit rock and roll.
That's during the show, and I loved that number too. But this is at the end when they go, we're so glad we had this time. Is that Donnie
and Marie? That's Carol Burnett.
Oh, that's my favorite. Sorry, Carol Burnett. Where she tug her ear?
Yeah, and she plays the cleaning woman sweeping up a spotlight.
Oh, I love that character.
That's how I want to go. I want to be a hobo sweeping up a spotlight. And then this is how I want to go. And then the North Vietnamese cop comes and shoots me in the head like the guy in the photo.
That's how I want to die. That song. This is why I'm bringing it up.
I want to be a hobo sweeping up a spotlight that gets shot in the head by the North Vietnamese.
I mistook the warmth from that song that was created in my mother as love for me. In other words, at the end of the thing, they go, how's it go?
Well, that's what I'm so glad we had this time together.
I'm so glad we have this time together just to have a laugh and sing a song.
Seems we just get started. And before you know it,
comes the time you got to say so long. Good night, everybody. My mother was thrilled because it was time for me to go to bed.
See, that's what your parents sing to you when they drive you to the island of misfit toys. I'm sorry, you ate.
Nice closure.
Yeah, you ate and you don't like baseball. You're different. You're going to an island. When do I see you again? I don't know. It's not on the calendar.
I don't see it. I don't see a date here.
Yeah, try to sleep with one eye open because there's a crazy guy that might pull your teeth out.
We'll miss you.
Merry Christmas.
But not so much that we're not sending you.
He is risen.
Yeah. Did you go to camp as a kid?
Yeah. Johnny? I went to CDC camp.
Oh wow, yeah. So God's there.
Here's what I'm thinking. Let's say you're the Wellesley High School guidance counselor.
Yeah, that'd be a good gig.
Yeah, guidance counselor, Wellesley High School.
Sure. What are you telling kids? Yeah, spend your folks' money wisely.
Yeah. You're gonna go to BC, you get a nice job in engineering.
Yeah, you're gonna be fine, don't worry.
Communications. It's a good major.
You should do something.
It's a good major.
A lot of the fields that you kids will go into don't exist yet, so don't worry about nothing.
Exactly. A lot of kids, yeah. Or just you come in one day, I don't know, scrimshaw. Yeah.
You know who I've never heard of? A cribbage champion. Why don't you work at that? It's an area that the people that would take your job away aren't in.
The best thing to do is invent a job, you know.
Because then you're really on the fast track.
I read the paper cover to cover today, and I saw not one story of a wind chime made of a horse skeleton.
That was actually one of my dad's big thing is like, you know who hasn't thought of something yet? The people. This is a real thing. You should have a clown truck.
A clown truck?
Yeah.
Because they're always crammed into those cars.
Yeah. He's like, you should have a clown truck. You could do 5-6 birthdays on the weekend. You'd have the rest of the weekend to do all that dumb shit you're doing.
Yeah. You want to see, you see 40 clowns come out of a car and you think, why don't you just get a passenger van? It's so much more comfortable.
He was telling me I needed the van for the balloons. He says, you can't be showing up with a car full of balloons. You look like a retard.
It would be funny because, you know,
that word's something different.
Yeah. Clowns, you know, they always had those oversized shoes.
Yeah.
It would be funny if they clearly also had giant cocks. Because you know what they say about big hands and big feet? Like, if he's a clown, but he clearly is just like a massive,
I never thought of that.
Like the hose of a vacuum cleaner. Like, like a terrifying, like the kind of vacuum cleaner you have to use at the do it yourself car wash.
Yeah.
Like,
just going to be a whole internet bracket
out
called
terrifying clown
appendages.
Just a big red shoes and a terrifying clown cock.
You know what they say about a clown size shoe?
No, sure.
Their foot's half that big.
But so let's say you're the Wellesley guidance counselor, and one day you're going to town, you're going to the city, and you're walking through the Boston Common.
Sure, that would be the place to go.
And there's a mime.
Okay.
And you realize it's one of your students.
Jeez, he's really come up in the world now.
Do you go home and hang yourself?
I think that's the loudest I've ever laughed at someone hanging themselves.
You know, it's like, oh, you are one of mine.
And now
you're a mime in the pack. Hey, I gotta go. Just quick note on the kitchen table. My life is I failed.
That's funny. There was a guy named Tony Chinamo. Do you remember that name at all?
Yeah, I remember Tony Chinamo.
Yeah, he was a jazz player in Boston, and he was a teacher. He was a great guy, but literally, if you told him, like, oh, you gotta hear this song, it's amazing. It's like, you know, just pretend it's Start Me Up by the Stones. But he would go, that's not music. You know, no matter if it wasn't jazz.
Ah!
It's not music. Now, interestingly, instead of going like, I hate this guy, I was like, he's right. You know what I mean? Like when you're listening to somebody who's so much more powerful than you as a kid, you start going like, oh, I will vote Republican. You know, like, what's that thing you told me this one, I think, Johnny, but that thing where it's like, if you're 25 years old, you're not a Democrat, you're heartless, but if you turn 50 and you're not a Republican, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all headed for idiots.
Yeah, we're all headed for idiots.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I was once walking as I was in, I had to go to Sabatino's, and I was just, it's two guys in line waiting for tables. They probably worked at Raytheon or someplace. They had their heads up their asses. And they're tucked in shirts.
Those look good.
Yeah.
When you tuck it in and your belly fits.
But this is what I hear. Are you talking jazz or jazz brunch jazz?
That's awesome.
And I really wanted to, I wish that I had just massive hands, massive pneumatic hands that I could literally just like, like hands like the Terminator guy where his hands could become knives.
Yeah.
I myself am tired of the tyranny that jazz holds over the concept of brunch.
They own it now.
What about a metal brunch?
No, you can't enjoy Hollandaise without brunch jazz.
Is there a nice death metal brunch?
Do they have brunch jazz pairings with the food they're eating?
Let's have some fruit. I would like some cantaloupe and some French toast.
Yeah, you know, you're gonna want some Brubeck with that, the Megs.
Would you like Brubeck with that? You know Robbie Cohen, right?
Sure, yeah. One of my favorite humans.
Yeah, he had that. Would you like jazz with that? Let's go find a good death metal brunch.
Oh, yeah. Slayer playing. Maybe even one of the guys that was in the band waiting tables there.
They all have one arm. All the drummers have one arm. Smeared with tats.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a tat?
I don't have any tats, but what I find interesting, these people that are covered with tats.
Yeah, if they ran out of room.
Well, they're covered with tats, and as they shrink, as they age, and osteoporosis shrinks their skeleton, and their skin naturally sags and wrinkles.
That's nice.
By the very end of their life, they look like a bad Easter egg.
They're like human shrinky dinks.
Yeah, they start to look like, their skin looks like the sky from It's the Great Pumpkin, World War One flying ace sequence.
That's very specific.
But think about it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Sorry if I dropped a truth bomb.
Political Talk with Two Guys from Boston.
Barbecue, barbecue, barbecue. Our barbecue is prepared especially for you.
He is a comedy legend. He is one of the giants of the silent film era. He not only mentored Charlie Chaplin, but he discovered Buster Keaton and Bob Hope. He is in one of the very first movies to feature a pie in the face. But if you ask anyone about Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle, they know him, if at all, for one thing and one thing only. He killed a woman by raping her with a Coke bottle. Not that he did it, but does that really matter? Roscoe started his life falsely accused. His dad was a tiny little thing, as was his mother, but he was born a whopping 13 pounds. And so his father insisted that his mother had had an affair. Driving his point home, he named his son after a then-famously philandering politician named Roscoe Conklin. All he did really was get borned. Roscoe Arbuckle grew up big and talented. He was, despite his girth, a marvelous dancer,
and supposedly had such a beautiful singing voice, the great Caruso himself suggested that if he quit acting and dedicated himself to vocal training, he could become, quote, the second greatest singer in the world, unquote. But Roscoe Arbuckle was too funny to sing. He began appearing in Max Sennett's famous Keystone Cops film series and soon became one of the most popular film comedians of the silent era. In 1913, Warner Brothers offered him a three-year, $3 million contract, which is the equivalent of about $50 million in today money. On September 5th, 1921, Fatty Arbuckle took a break from his hectic filming schedule and drove to San Francisco with a couple of friends to relax. They rented three rooms at the St. Francis Hotel, two rooms to stay in and one room for the party suite. I'm sure we are all familiar. At one point during the course of the festivities, Arbuckle was asked by a friend, May Taub, if he could possibly drive her into town. Arbuckle said yes and went into his room to change. And when he did, he found another friend, an actress named Virginia Rapp, vomiting into the toilet, which was considerate of Virginia Rapp. He carried her to bed and asked several other guests to keep an eye on her. Rapp started to convulse and was placed in a cool bath to calm her down. Arbuckle called the hotel manager and the hotel doctor. The hotel doctor said that Rapp was simply very drunk. This was at the height of Prohibition, by the way. The hotel doctor gave her a shot of morphine to calm her down, and after that, Arbuckle drove May Taub into town. Here's the problem. Virginia Rapp suffered from chronic cystitis. This was not helped by her proclivity of getting very drunk on massive quantities of Prohibition liquor, which was not regulated and contained God knows what. Also, she was not helped by her habit of having abortions, one of which was apparently very recent. 2 days after Fatty Arbuckle's party, Virginia Rapp came down with peritonitis and went to the hospital. Her companion at the party, a woman named Bambina Delmont, told the doctor at the hospital that she and Virginia had gone to a party hosted by the famous comedian Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle, and that he had raped Rapp. It was, according to Bambina Delmont, a case of Rapp rape. But the doctor found no evidence. Rapp died of her injuries, and based on Bambina Delmont's accusations, Fatty Arbuckle was charged with her rape and murder. This was big doings, and the story grew like a bad game of telephone. Arbuckle and his friends placing Rapp into a cool tub to ease her abdominal pain soon became Arbuckle rubbing ice on her belly, which soon became Arbuckle raping her with a chunk of ice, which soon became Arbuckle raping her with a Coke bottle. Virginia Rapp's ruptured bladder was caused not by chronic cystitis, but because Arbuckle was so fat that when he laid down on top of her to rape her, her bladder exploded. It seems odd that nothing else did, but that's beside the point. Arbuckle's supposed guilt sold newspapers and helped political careers, so truth be damned, the hysteria train was off and rolling. The Hearst newspaper chain, which in its day made Fox News look like 60 Minutes, began pushing the story hard. Roscoe Arbuckle was portrayed as a hulking lech who used his massive physical weight to overpower innocent young women. The truth of the matter was Arbuckle was a friendly, mild-mannered, gentle giant of a guy, and when this was pointed out to Hearst, he simply shrugged and said that the case was selling more papers than the sinking of the Lusitania. Helping the Hearst side of the story was San Francisco's district attorney, Matthew Brady, not the Civil War photographer. Brady was aggressive and ambitious and had his eye on the California governor's seat and saw the conviction of a big movie star like Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle a good way to get there. And Matthew Brady had his star witness, Bambina Delmont. There was one problem. He could not allow her to testify. Why? Well, I'll tell you. Bambina Delmont had a long criminal record for fraud and extortion and was currently making her living by luring married men into compromising situations, having themselves secretly photographed, and then extorting money from the men to have the pictures destroyed. Add to that was the inconvenient truth that Arbuckle's defense had a letter from Delmont trying to extort money from Arbuckle for her silence. But the case went ahead anyway. The hotel doctor testified that Rapp's bladder seemed to have been ruptured by an external force. Fellow partygoer Betty Campbell testified that she saw Arbuckle smiling at the party just after the rape, according to the prosecution's timeline. A local criminologist, Dr. Edward Heinrichs, claimed to have found Arbuckle's fingerprints smeared in blood on the bedroom door. On cross-examination, it was learned that one thing the hotel doctor left out of his original testimony was the fact that Rapp, when he examined her, said nothing whatsoever about being assaulted. Nothing. Betty Campbell admitted that based on what she saw at the party, she saw no reason to testify against Arbuckle, but that the DA threatened to charge her with perjury if she didn't. As to Dr. Edward Heinrichs, it was revealed that when he said he found Arbuckle's fingerprints smeared with blood on the hotel door, what he really meant to say was that he did not find Arbuckle's fingerprints smeared with blood on the hotel door. The case went to the jury, which deadlocked. One of the two holdouts was later revealed to be a woman whose husband did a lot of work with, guess who? San Francisco District Attorney Matthew Brady. She refused to review the evidence or read the transcripts because, in her words, she made up her mind he was guilty long before the trial. And so, it was declared a mistrial and went to trial number two. Trial number two was also a prosecutorial train wreck, once again at the hand of the hapless and apparently completely amoral Matthew Brady. The star witness this time around was one Jesse Norgard, a studio security guard who testified that Arbuckle had once asked him for Rapp's dressing room key, going so far as to offer him money for it. This sounded damning to Arbuckle's case, until it was learned on cross-examination that Norgard was an ex-convict who was currently charged with sexually assaulting an 8-year-old girl and was told by San Francisco District Attorney Matthew Brady that if he testified against Arbuckle, he would get a reduced sentence. So sure of Arbuckle's acquittal that the defense did not even put him on the stand.
Mistake!
Two of the jury members thought that looked fishy, and so that jury deadlocked as well. On to trial number three. In March of 1922, Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle went on his third well-publicized trial for the rape and murder of Virginia Rapp. By this time, even his defense team had had enough, and they made such a shambles of the state's case that the jury deliberated for all of 60 seconds. They spent 5 additional minutes writing Arbuckle a formal letter of apology for having subjected him to a trial in the first place, noting in a sentence written, no doubt, for the hapless district attorney Matthew Brady to hear, quote, "There was not the slightest proof to connect Arbuckle with the commission of any crime." Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle was free, but his career and the public's perception of him was in shambles. Despite being found innocent, William Hayes of the newly formed Motion Picture Producers and Distributors of America, in other words, the Hollywood Censor Board, cited Arbuckle as a symbol of Hollywood's moral degeneracy and banned him from ever working in films again. Eventually, Arbuckle adopted the pseudonym William Goodrich, which was his dad's name, and worked as a director. Slowly, 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 he started to eke his way back. And on June 29th, 1933, Warner Brothers signed him to star in a feature-length film. He went out with friends that night to celebrate, famously claiming, "This is the best day of my life." He went home that night, had a heart attack, and died. He was 46. Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle. Some people cannot get a break. Now, maybe you'd like to read about Arbuckle in greater detail. It is an amazing story. The three best books are Frame Up by Andy Edmonds, The Day the Laughter Stopped by David Yallop, Yallop. Permanent Midnight author Jerry Stahl wrote a novel about Arbuckle entitled I, Fatty. All of these are available for your perusal at Amazon.com. But how do you get there? It's easy. Go to DanaGould.com. Click on our Amazon banner and shop away. You get what you want, and for no extra charge, we get a couple extra beans here to keep the lights on. Also, on the homepage of danagould.com, you'll see options to donate to the show or subscribe to the show through PayPal. Every cent goes back into the program, and please know we appreciate what, if anything, you care to give. Hey, before we go back to the interviews, let me tug on your coat for one moment. You know, for many of us, shaving is a pain. It's uncomfortable, and razor blades are outrageously expensive. Harry's was started by two guys who wanted a better product without paying an arm and a leg to get it. Harry's makes their own blades, high-quality, high-performing German blades crafted by shaving experts. Have you ever met a shaving expert? They're so smooth. Harry's offers a high-quality shave that's better for your face and for your wallet. You might say they've shaved down the price. Harry's blades are about half the price of other big branded blades, and they ship for free to your front door or your side door. Here's the exciting news from Harry's. They've officially launched two new products: Foaming Shave Gel and Aftershave Moisturizer. The starter set is an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, foaming shave gel, and three razor blades. Go to harrys.com right now. They'll give you $5 off if you type in my coupon code DANA with your first purchase. That's HARRYS.com. Enter coupon code DANA and check out for $5 off. Start shaving better and be smoother tomorrow.
You get yours and enjoy it now.
This is how I equate my recent Conan experience that was saved by editing and their good graces. As if I was on a first date with a woman that I really wanted to date, and then during the date at the restaurant sitting across from her, I sneezed and shit myself.
Well, I'll tell you about the time I just sneezed and shit myself.
And then, and then had to excuse myself suddenly to get out of there before the stench hit her. Then when I went to the bathroom, lowering my pants, seeing the horrible mess that I've made, nauseates me, and then throwing up into my pants
into
that
your
are
pants.
Already full of
shit.
Fecal matter.
And yeah. Conan sees all of it.
Conan says, Conan's in the next stall and says, thank God that happened here.
Thank God that happened at this restaurant.
Then I have to walk back out to my date and going, you're probably wondering about the vomit and the fecal yeah. matter in my pants.
Sometimes, like, I'll bomb so hard, I'll be like, I can't
you bomb?
Believe. Oh, like, all the time.
You kill really? You're so
all
funny.
The time. I agree to so many weird shows. Like, I kind of like the thrill still of that no one knows who I am and I can go to a show and it'll
be not that
it'll
hard
be
to find.
Like, oh, all the time. All the time. As, yeah, like, it, you know, I'll be in front of, like, bikers or something and they just would be like, what? We don't think you're funny. And, I did the Comedy and Magic Club and it was probably the hardest I've ever bombed. And that was a moment where I had a, like, I had begged to get referred.
Comedy Magic Club, for people who don't go there, imagine the town of Brea got struck by lightning and was turned into a person.
Yeah.
Them and all their friends go to the Comedy Magic Club.
Well, my story, it's just sad. There's no moment.
You would only work well in that room if you were glazed with candy.
I begged TJ Miller to refer me because I was so desperate to figure out anything in this town. I was like, hey, please, I heard you have to get a referral. And he's like, okay, but don't fuck it up because if you fuck up,
I could have told you.
It looks bad, on us.
I like Mike Lacey, who runs that, is a great guy.
It seems
really
such a nice
person,
club. It was,
but it's just
the neighborhood.
It's not a good neighborhood for you. Yeah, when they hear alternative, why? Everything's perfect. Why would we want an alternative to anything? We're white, rich, and we live at the beach. Yeah. we don't want anything to be alternative.
We moved here to get away from anything alternative.
Yeah. And there was 16 comics in front
of me. Well, they
don't
understand the concept of angst.
And Darren Carter was the MC. Do you know him? The party starter?
Darren Carter, anybody.
The party starter. He just starts doing rap.
I don't know anybody who uses the word party as a verb.
And he's annihilating for 20 minutes as his opening, MC thing. And then between each comic does 5 minutes. He has a flashlight and he's moving it around and doing strip club sound effects. And everyone's losing their minds.
Yeah.
And every comic's killing.
I just imagine a wave.
Show.
I'm looking in the audience. It's just an undulating mass of pastel. bills. And so many pink sleeveless sweaters.
I go on stage and I'm like smiling like I'm gonna really try. Sometimes I focus up and I bump. It's like so silent the entire time. And I'm like, okay, bye. Thank you for your time. I get off stage. I just turn, walk out, cry. I just walk down the street like crying. And it was like a life moment where I was like, I have to figure something out. You like, because I know this was not the thing. You
take
know?
It,
like,
take it from somebody who
it made me realize
almost embarrassed himself on national television only a week ago.
Oh, yeah.
You are right. And they are wrong.
Well, yeah, it's like the embarrassment never stops. And that was like one of the greatest lessons of it. Yeah. In that moment, it's like a thing of like the Hitchcock zoom where you're like, I need this not to happen.
Well, the other thing
right
is,
now,
you know, that's,
I need this like, to happen.
Comedy Magic Club is great.
Yeah.
And the people there are great and they're all nice. But there's an aspect of stand-up comedy that it's like music. Mm-hmm. A country and western band can't play at a punk club.
Yeah.
Certain comics are going to work better in certain environments.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and that's how it should be. Yeah. Like somebody used to say, like, you should be able to go into any room and kill. No, you're a terrible act.
Yeah.
Then you're Journey.
Yeah.
You know,
then you're REO Speedwagon.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you're a painting in a hotel room.
Yeah.
It's
this won't offend anybody.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's you're true, Miller. And it's also very hard when you're coming up because you're just like, you have no idea where you're even going.
And
the road seems so ambiguous.
And when you're coming up in comedy, you're constantly told what you should be doing or how you should be doing it. You never. No one ever says, like, find your own way.
That's what I do.
You have to do 8 shows a night, and you have to write a new 20 minutes of material every 11 minutes.
You got
to
complain about LA because it sucks. Why? You have a great life, you barely make any money, and you have a pretty nice place. Yeah, but it's not New York.
There's 11 flights an hour going back there. I'll drive you to the airport. Yeah. I like driving.
It's a nice day out. I might even just go down the coast just because I can. Because
I can, There's a lot of discussion in your documentary about the purity movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that, by the way, just as a funny sideline, a complete and utter failure. But talk about the purity movement. Were you a part of that?
I was totally. I had the ring. I pledged my virginity to Jesus. And I had a Bible verse inscribed in this white gold ring. And I wore it on my ring finger. And I was going to give it to my husband on my wedding day.
So you pledge your virginity to Jesus, but then you give yourself to your husband.
Yes. And in the meantime, I sort of transferred my virginity to my father.
Right.
Yeah,
the dads are creepy.
Goo. What if when you pledge your virginity to Jesus, you hear very clearly a voice in your head going, nice.
Jesus is really hot is the thing that if you could actually, if Jesus would come and have sex with you first and teach you sex, that would be great.
Was he always rocking the middle part?
The mun? Is that what the kids are calling
it? Oh, that man bun?
The man bun.
See, now, this is my thing. If there is a God that is powerful enough to influence human behavior, he would not allow men to walk around in yoga buns. I think if you're a man in yoga pants and a beard and a hair and a bun, it should be illegal for you to start a sentence with, seriously. So, okay, purity movement in the 90s, evangelical Christians basically in South, Southwest, get a hold of this thing like, everybody's going to get AIDS. They're going to get AIDS from gay people. Like, gay people are going to give it to hookers, and then it's going to get into us. I remember when the theory was, all the gay people are dying of AIDS. Oh, shucks. We might get it, too. We've got to fix this.
Yeah.
That I absolutely remember when that
happened. Well, and I mean, that really is like, that's a direct correlation to like the purity movement in the 1800s. Like, it's a reactionary thing. I'm afraid that this is going to happen to me now, so I got to fight against it.
Well, no one really gave a shit until young white women started getting pregnant. So the welfare reform bill of 96 that Clinton signed was actually in conjunction with the religious right. But the religious right had been trying to get that pushed through since the 80s. So Clinton was like, oh, black people having children out of wedlock. Oh, that's so sad. Welfare reform bill, right? And then they were like, oh, well, shit. We can't have young white women getting pregnant too. So let's really do something about it. And then at the same time, that happened with the AIDS crisis. And just like what you said, Dana, about like them not caring. And then all of us, like in 93, like things were happening. And then it wasn't until like 95, 96 that they're like, oh, maybe we should try to find some antiretroviral, you know, sort of situation.
Well, I remember Liberace died because of his watermelon diet.
Is that what they were saying?
Yeah, he ate a lot of watermelon. She had a period of time where all he ate was watermelon, And that's what killed him.
That sounds racist.
No, that's true. He lost all the weight because he was only eating watermelon, and he had renal failure because of watermelon. And Rock Hudson just had cancer, and then people suddenly realized, wait, Rock Hudson was gay. I believe I opened the Brea Improv when it was like seven locations ago. And the review in the paper, I remember it because it was like, Dana Gould was really funny, but the crowd didn't know what to make of him.
That's like the reporter got it.
Yeah, the reporter got it.
That's absolutely the nicest
angle I've ever. I don't blame those crowds. Like, this is not what you want.
Nor should it be.
No, you, I know. Yeah.
And you want the wacky races.
Yeah.
Exactly. If I can make a 55-year-old multimillionaire who lives on the beach laugh, there's probably a problem happening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like, what am I talking about that he's interested in?
You're the only person he's met that day that isn't an architect.
Yeah. Someone as funny as John Roy, who for a while struggled to do well in alternative rooms, even though he's a very alternative guy in his like spirit. Like, he listens to interesting music and reads comic books, but he was killing in clubs. Mm-hmm. And, like, he would destroy at the Comedy Magic Club, but would struggle in an alternative room. Yeah. And so there's always that adverse side of it, too.
Right.
It's like, I think it's laying out the connections to them. It's like, if you're going a little, that you act like they know anything about comedy, then if you're really good at like laying out your thoughts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good, which he is too. Like, his ideas are funny to anybody because he's able to like.
Yeah, he could talk about something you've never heard of or never seen and break it down.
Yeah. Perfectly. He just methodically knows how to talk.
Exactly.
About,
Yeah.
I mean, alternative is like saying new wave. It doesn't mean anything. It's a marketing term. But if you're genuine and you can relate to people, I think you can get over. The one thing that I do
it's more likely
about
for me
like,
to go, you guys are going to make me cry. Well, like, then to be like, hey,
nice,
this fucking guy.
Good, safe, standard comics get to see people like you and I go up in their clubs and tank. And we don't get to see them go up in our club and eat it because they don't have the balls to try to work there. And that's what I want to see, is just a couple of those guys come up with their juggling pins or whatever and just fucking chew leather for 40 minutes.
I don't know. Jeselnik, I went to his pilot taping for what became the Jeselnik Offensive. So I go.
Because I'm going to go on an offensive.
And so I
did
go.
Did you feel defensive?
No, I didn't. But I go, and I guess like last minute, Brody couldn't warm up, and so they got some guy. They just got some guy who's balancing chairs on his chin, juggling, like doing real bass jokes. And I'm in there, and I'm there for my friend, not there for this shit.
Right.
And so I'm just looking around, hanging out, and the guy zeroes in on me and just starts accusing me of not getting the bits, not understanding the jokes. Starts calling me a hipster. And it's just, I was so angry. It's like, you don't want to be the guy that stands up and go, no, I get the jokes. They're just not good.
Yeah.
This guy is bass, everybody.
Yeah, like, exactly. I'm waiting for the good jokes. Hear from my friend.
Yeah.
If you were a band, you'd be playing anyway you want. Exactly. I know that you're telling jokes in the same way I know Chicago plays songs.
Sometimes
it's just not something I'm going to put on. Yeah. My friends moved to San Francisco in 84, like right at the height of
the AIDS epidemic.
Our friends Tom, Dan, and Ball all moved to San Francisco in the mid-80s, rented a house right in the middle of the goddamn Castro. And we had no idea. You would see right away like an ambulance a day, and within a year you were seeing an ambulance every 20 minutes. It was just, it went through like the plague. I mean, it was, the gay plague. It went through like the fucking plague. And that was when people were like, we're all going to get it. Mm-hmm. And so that's like, when they started.
What did
to,
your family on the East Coast think? Did they think that this was like a real thing, or was it scare tactics?
No, they thought that everybody was going to, if you had sex, you were going to die of AIDS. If you weren't having, if you were having unprotected sex, you were going to get AIDS.
So it was no longer like the bathhouse plague or anything.
No,
like
the belief was that you're not having sex with this person. You are having sex with everyone they've ever had sex with.
Right.
That was the line. That was like, so I was like, great, my number shoots, skyrockets up.
But
I'm now having sex with so many people.
The sort of mass education, I think, was really good, though. Like, because I, in the 90s, it would just turn on MTV and it was like, wear a condom, AIDS, AIDS, AIDS. And like, when I started having sex, of course you wear a condom, duh. And now, like, I was watching MTV the other night for the first time in like 20 years, and all the PSAs were about smoking, and it was just like, man, this is so lame. Like, we had AIDS, and they have smoking. Like, but I'm glad that there
after
was
you
that.
Have bareback sex, why not enjoy some carrot sticks and ranch dressing? Or pixie sticks, or a Lick-A-Maid.
Exactly. Their big campaign is swipe right. It's like songs about like people
getting on Tinder
and seeing people smoking in their Tinder pictures and being like, I'm only going to have anonymous sex with non-smokers.
Wow. We've gone from the age of pledging your virginity to Jesus, and I'm not even sure I want to revisit the thing you said about your dad.
He thought it was weird, by the way.
Yeah, and then going to now getting laid is like eBay. You just need a phone, and you just. I never have used any of those things.
Yeah, me neither. I'm
kind of glad because to me, Tinder is like looks like a whirlpool. I would never come out of that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. That's why I fucking...
Yeah, I would be driving around Encino right now. Where do you live? I throw it a line.
I'm driving around a casino.
Yeah. I'm incarcerated. You know,
I would have some and I wouldn't have any drugs. I would just have donuts next to me.
Yeah.
Where the fuck are you?
It's so weird. My friends that are on it, it's so weird. Like, I was in a bar with a friend of mine the other night, and she was like, oh, I know that guy. I've been talking to that guy on Tinder. I was like, well, go talk to him. And she's like, no, I'm not going to, I'll message him. And I was just like, what? And so she like messaged him, are you at this bar? And then he messaged back, yes. And then they didn't talk.
What?
Yeah. They were just checking each other's profiles out or whatever and had like messaged and been
oh,
like,
and they were at the same bar.
Yeah, they're at the same bar in real life. I don't know.
78% of intercourse under 32 years old is interrupted by a video of Jimmy Fallon as Neil Young. Or him playing Gnip-Gnop with Emma Stone. I have to take a piss, and then we can fuck some more. But while I'm up, I'm just going to watch Jimmy Fallon sing the Brady Bunch theme while dressed like Bruce Springsteen. Jay Leno used to warm up his monologues at Comedy Magic Club because it was the perfect, like, that's who he, when he was hosting The Tonight Show, that's who he was aiming at.
Yeah.
I literally saw him the other day driving down Coldwater in a B-17 Super Fortress with wheels on it. I mean, he just, speaking of the wacky races, it's every time you see him, he's in a locomotive with three tires. Yeah. He's in a skateboard with a
past.
He's in a skateboard with jet wings. Yeah. He's, you know,
Doc Brown's like putting in stuff into the Mr. Fusion.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
Oh, we're going to go correct Hitler.
I wonder when he left The Tonight Show, he went to his warehouse of cars. He's like, I have time now.
Yeah, exactly.
I have time to drive you. And then his glasses fall off.
I was going to look at all these cars.
I was thinking the other day, apropos of nothing, it would be funny if Superman could fly, but he was afraid of heights, so he only flew like 4 feet off the ground. You're always having to move out of the way.
Excuse me. Sorry. I always wondered, like, what is the science behind the arms out when he's flying? If you have the ability to fly, do you really need to put your arms out?
Yeah.
Like,
can't you text and fly at the same time?
That's what I want to see in the next Superman movie. Just like... BRB, have to destroy Lex Luthor.
I'm going to predict that the next Superman movie, there's not a shot that lasts long enough to imply someone texting a word.
Yeah.
Going to be a lot of punching.
There'll be a cut every 3 seconds.
Superman? What? Batman? Yes. There. Yeah. Krypton. Yes.
The building. He punches a hole through the earth. Here's something that happened to me that I might have told on the podcast before that I can't believe really happened to me. It was a while ago. I was living in Boston, and a comedian was giving me a ride back to my apartment from the club, ran a red light, and we got pulled over. And as he got pulled over, he put this envelope of cocaine that was on the dashboard that I didn't see in his pocket and said, hey, there's a big bag of pot at your feet. You should hide it. And I, who have had no experience with drugs to this day, did and was very young and just panicked and did the dumbest thing I could possibly do. Put it in my pant leg.
Oh, no.
Whoa. Cop comes up to the car, asks me to step out of the car, asks me what's in my pant leg, asks me if I've ever been arrested before.
Why does he know to look for your pant leg?
Because he saw me like moving around as he's walking up to the car. Exactly. He took the drugs and let us go.
Perfect.
Boston?
Yeah. But to this day, I can't believe that really happened.
driving.
I had a bale of someone else's pot in my pant leg.
One time I was just smoking pot out of my car after doing a gig, and then I just pulled out. It was so late at night, and I was like, I'm just going to listen to music, drive home, and, you know, short drive, and then, like, cop pulls me over, and it's a lady cop, and she's like,
lady cop.
I smelled pot smoke, and I go, yeah, I was smoking a while ago. She just saw me do it and pulled me over, and I go, yeah, that was a while ago. And she's like, all right, I want you to be, like, real truthful, and, you know, and she's like, do you have pot on you? I'm like, yes, here it is. And I just hand it to her, like, right away.
Uh-huh.
And I go, I got a license, and, like, I just go, like, I didn't get high just now. No, I got high earlier. And yes, I smoke pot. Some of that weird, like, the way I said it, the confusion, like, she already sent the dog home. There was, like, another car that came, you know, like, right away, like, instantaneously. It was almost like it was planned. They just both showed up. Yeah. I take the test real quick.
The like, pot dogs in LA must be so tired.
They're overweight.
That guy?
They take a bite out of crime and donuts and Cheetos. And
take a bite out of pie.
Yeah. And I just was super calm.
We have a license to smoke pot. Right?
Yeah, but you can't, like, fucking smoke pot and drive a car, you know, like,
okay.
As cool as it makes you.
To that end.
They just wish you wouldn't, even though I swear to God, it makes me way better driver.
Yeah.
Isn't all of this stuff ebbing away? I mean, how strong is the evangelical movement now? The purity movement didn't work.
But it's still super strong. It exists in these little subcultural groups. And so the ideas of purity are no longer spread through the face of the purity movement of, you know, in 93, there was 120,000. It was called the Million Virgin March, but it was like 120,000.
They have that every year. It's called Comic-Con.
I was virgin number 5,148.
Were you in that march?
Fun fact, I wanted to go. I couldn't afford it. Afford the trip.
You're too poor to go to the virgin march.
Not good. Not good on a lot of levels.
I was just a virgin in my bedroom.
God damn it, I'm missing Woodstock. I mean the virgin.
But see, and
that was your Woodstock.
But that's what's scarier is that before it was like this like huge movement and everybody could point to it. And now it's just within the culture. Evangelicalism is just like sexually repressive. And it's just this thing that everybody knows now. And it's taken as truth.
Every diehard belief has the false assumption that we have to convert everyone to how we think. Mm. And the people that we fail are going to get eaten by Sarlacc. I, as the only person, I think, on this panel with children and daughters, my kids always say please and thank you to people the world.
Here we go.
My kids are the best kids.
Right.
No, because
this
because
is what I'm talking
because,
about.
Because we always say please and thank like just like to
no no
waiters right. and waitresses and we always,
same thing
you,
with
please.
Love and sex. I would think too.
And
like if you're in a loving household, I would think sex
and you treat women with respect. Like that's a huge boon.
Well,
that and you treat women with respect, and that way they will have self-respect. They won't let themselves be treated in another way. And I think they'll naturally have a very healthy attitude towards sex, clearly with guidance. And I don't know everything I'm supposed to know yet about how to communicate it with them. Unfortunately, I have a little bit of time. But I think that by like screwing that lid down, by like, if you have an orgasm, you might as well just saw your fucking head off.
On a throw pillow.
But
that saying.
But also, when 2 years ago when Prop 8 was out here, which was gay people shouldn't get married, there was a commercial. The little girl comes home to her mother and says, "You know what we learned at school today, Mommy? That I can marry a boy or a girl if I want." And the mother goes, "What?" And where I was watching the commercial and I go, yeah, exactly. That's what I would say to my kid. Yeah, you can marry a girl if you want. Well, that's who you love. You should
love,
marry.
Love.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, proud of this, but it's just a thing that happened a long time ago. As I got real drunk and I went to drive to my friend's house in Pasadena. I was probably 23 at the time and I just was driving and then I took a left from the wrong lane and I saw a cop behind me. So I was like, oh, I'm just pulling into this bank and I pulled into the bank and I start to get out and like they like go, woo, shine the light on me. They're like, get back in your car. I'm like, what's going on? And like just waiting. And then
I've tried that too, where you just you pull into a structure, you're like, no, I'm just going to this Wendy's.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't just driving. I was only getting to this Wendy's.
Yeah.
So
I'm just going to this ballet school.
And I love that you got out of
at night.
You got out of your car. You got out of your car.
Stay.
They were in like a parking lot of a bank in South Pasadena, and
by the way. Beautiful area.
Beautiful area. Oh, the Huntington Gardens. This time of year,
great place to get arrested.
Yeah. You have time to get pulled over.
Yeah. So it's so I'm real drunk and I'm real young. I'm real scared. And I remember that I still had my Hawaii license. When they asked for my license, I gave them my Hawaii license, and I go, I'm sorry, I don't. I was visiting my brother in San Diego. I've been driving all day. I was a production assistant, I want to move out here and I want to work in movies. And I didn't know the hours were so long, and I've been up since 2 a.m. Like, I just kind of kept on going. They're like, let's get you out of the car, and they had me do all those tests. And then
wait, so you were drunk a little bit and you had to take the test?
I was wasted.
And you took the test?
Yeah, did the line, and they had me try and stand them like 1 foot for a while, which I can't do anyway.
Well, it's just I always think say the alphabet backwards. I can't say the alphabet backwards.
Yeah.
No.
I can't do that now.
Yeah.
Can't do it now. I can't do that after a fucking line of cocaine.
Take me to jail.
The last time I was drunk, neither one of you were on the planet yet.
Yeah.
And I've never done drugs. I couldn't do the alphabet backwards.
And it was
starts with Z.
Yeah, and your adrenaline just that's the thing. Your adrenaline starts pumping the booze through your system even more so.
Oh yeah, that's
and
funny.
So I was just nervous and I'm trying to tell him, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to. I just said, we had drinks after the production. And
you did admit you had some drinks.
I did.
That's a bad one.
I know, but I was already out of the car. We can smell it on you. And so they're like, well, we can't let you. I can't. I got a flight tomorrow.
Let you go.
They're like, we can't let you drive. It's like, is there anyone that can pick you up?
Oh my God.
And I was like, there's one person that I know that just can come pick me up. And that was Dana De Armand. And she lived in Pasadena. I was like, hey, I got pulled over by cops and I need you to pick me up. And she's like, my license is expired and so are my tags. And I was like, let's pull a Ferris Bueller. You just kind of pull far away and go, I'm here. And then once they see you're here, I go and we drive, we go home and I crash on your couch. And so she came and she picked me up. And
hey guys, I only have one person who made me up. She's a porn star.
She wasn't. She hadn't done anything.
She was just a porn character actor at that point.
No.
She played extra. Wow, that's a lot of cum. Reacting in the back.
What can I get you guys?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So when they knew your friend was coming, how long did that take for her to show up? It must have been
15 minutes. She lived in Pasadena.
Oh, okay.
And so it was just like...
It was amazing they would wait. Cops don't...
It's Pasadena. What else are they going to do?
So what kind of production you in?
Yeah. And I just kind of
brother's a screenwriter.
That's true.
And then to kind of shut down to avoid conversation. I just slumped down on a curb and looked real bummed out and sad. And then they just asked me questions about Hawaii. Hey, me and my wife are thinking about going down there. Oh, you should. It's beautiful. I'm so sorry.
Did you kind of cover up how drunk you actually were?
When I get drunk, when I get real drunk, I start to steel myself. I start to I'm so afraid of sounding sloppy or seeming, I'm not in control that
you over enunciate.
Yeah, I start to
hello, officer. I can't help noticing your name is written on your chest in a small rectangular tag.
When I did Drunk History, everyone's like, you're not that drunk. I was like, I'm pretty gone, but it's because and then what happened after that is that the Hawaiians came. And telling the story in Drunk History and Captain Cook and his men. And you can see I'm white knuckling through.
My dad used to come home drunk and come into my brother's in my bedroom, just turn on the light, 2 in the morning on a Tuesday, 9, 10 years old. Jesus. What's going on in here?
What's going on in here?
Here comes Santa Claus. Here comes Santa Claus.
Yep.
Good times.
Yeah.
Didn't affect me at all.
I'm curious though, what did you all learn about sex growing up? How did you learn about sex?
Well, in my case, it was my parents. It wasn't good for me because they were not that intimate. So it was just that horrible teenage way of finding out, on my own, so awkwardly, because my folks weren't that loving with each other. And I never was really sat down, and it was taboo. And that's why I say that I got Catholicism through the back door, because they were scared of their body. My dad was scared of his body. I remember coming into the living room naked. I mean, I was 35, but he was like, put some clothes on. No, but I was a kid. I forget how young, and he reacted like the naked body isn't cool. So
you deserve what you saw.
Now I get it because of what I turned into. But I mean, I
so it was your dad's body or your body?
My body.
Your dad saw you naked.
So he shamed you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I was the youngest of five kids. So I think, I mean, I don't remember ever learning about sex. I think it was just teenagers in the house talking about sex all the time. And like, I saw movies I shouldn't have seen too early. Really?
Yeah. Well, see, that was the thing. We had Starcase, and it was like a pay-per-view movie. It was cable, early cable. And
can I say a funny thing? So you saw the Bob Hope Road movies too early?
No, you know, I saw... When I was a little kid, I saw Clockwork Orange when I was like three.
Oh, yeah. When you were three, that's five and up, right? But you have to be five.
But I like didn't... The whole rape stuff, I didn't get it. Right. I was just I don't know. Like, they're just weird. And that's one of my favorite movies.
My biggest problem with that movie is a lot of white pants after Labor Day.
You are a stickler for that, which is why I don't watch that movie with you.
It's too much. Stop it.
Yeah, we had this weird cable that had porn, and I was exposed to it so young that I thought up until college, the only way I was going to get laid was by growing a mustache and being a pizza delivery man or pool cleaner.
Wait, so you had it without the squiggle lines?
Yeah, no,
I remember that.
You remember the squiggle lines?
I will tell you this, in all honesty, I was exposed to it way too early. And shouldn't have been.
But now kids are exposed to it so early because of the internet.
Now it's unbelievable.
But that was show porn to their children very young.
Let's sing a song of four. How many is four? Four hot dudes. Four. Two Czechoslovakian gangbangs.
Let's sing a song of two. I think porn is so disgusting.
Yeah.
Porn is so over the top, extreme, horrible. It involves sex slavery, this whole thing. You know, I almost kind of appreciate the restrictions of, but not as much like the evangelicals do, but I understand it somewhat.
What you're saying is you, Eddie, aren't a fan of porn.
And, not anymore.
Right. No, I'm the same way. I'm actually the same way. It was just like, to me, it's just I joked about this, but it's true. I put a porn blocker on the computers because the kids are old enough to get on the computers.
I need to do that.
And I forgot the code. When I tried to, like, I couldn't remember it. And I found that I got so much more done.
Right.
Because it's so easy. Like, if you have to write something, I don't want to write something. I'll look at that. No, I still waste a lot of time, but I go to, like, I look at, like, my friend Steve's Tumblr that has, like, old comic book panels or something. But I'm much better off without it, me, personally. But neither you or I are going, so therefore, no one else should ever have access to it.
No.
That's what I'm not saying. People can look at porn till their eyeballs fall out, as far as I'm concerned. I'm fascinated by the success of 50 Shades of Grey, which is so popular. And then the movie, which I don't know if it did well or not, but the interesting thing about the movie is the movie was all about the one thing that the movie can't show you. But you can see that thing on your phone for free. The thing that they can't show you in any other form of media, you can't fucking get away from.
I think a lot of times with sex, the lead up to the sex is often better than the actual sex, right? And I think it's the same way.
The high speed chase. The running the red lights, the getting them off the road.
I think it's often more sexy, though, when you see something on screen, you don't see it all the way, because then you can film the blank.
That's very true. Yeah. That's why porn isn't sexy, really, after a while. It's like, whoa, this is not sexy
at all. Around hour 70.
When it's a bloody little stump, and it's
I've seen very little porn. Like, the only porn...
At a certain point, it's just cold
I've
cuts.
Seen, like, I've seen all the classic movies, and I've seen, like, Deep Throat in the Theater, and, like, Devil Miss Jones in the Theater, and stuff like that, like, when there's been revivals.
Me too. You saw him in the theater, too?
Yeah, yeah. They played him the Sunday, when it was the Sunset Five. They played
Oh, right.
I saw him at that other theater, Cummy Joe's.
But, like, the first time I masturbated to anything was...
Don't talk about that!
But no, it's okay. Was to...
You're my friend! I can't...
No, I did. No. No, I was joking about it. When I was a kid...
See, this is it, Nick.
Listen, I'm telling you about when I first masturbated Danny Pills.
La, 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 la.
Like Water for Chocolate, that foreign movie that, like...
Yeah.
That's the first
that
movie that I was
movie,
like,
right?
Oh, this is really sexy. And I worry about, like, that's how I learned, like, about my sexuality or whatever, you know?
The movie with Reese Witherspoon
no,
and the
no,
elephants?
No, 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 no. Yeah, that
why
came out, like, 2 years ago.
Why would you jack off the elephant?
2 years ago with Susan's.
I have to say.
First foray into masturbation.
I have to say, the first time I masturbated.
Finally masturbated,
the,
yeah, you
the
guys.
The first time I masturbated was, I saw Guardians of the Galaxy in the theater.
Mine was to a hockey fight in 1978. Mine I don't know why I did it.
First time I masturbated was when Bobby Orr scored the winning goal against the St. Louis Blues in 1971.
That was a great goal.
I'm going to make a prediction. Within the next 6 years,
mm-hmm.
ISIS flag over the White House.
Other podcasts reach for the sky. Dana Goldbaum.
We barely try.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. Produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano. Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
You're probably wondering about the vomit and the fecal matter in my pants.